welcome and thank you all for coming along this afternoon to this discussion. It's really, the purpose of it being is that there's been a lot of this interest and debate around the state of the Manawatu River in recent times. And currently we're in the one plan hearing process, and we had a panel of experts here today that I'll introduce shortly. And we thought there was a good opportunity to actually provide the media with the chance to ask questions. Hopefully we'll be able to convey the answers to those questions in a layman term, so it's relatively easy to understand because it is a complex issue. So it's very much an interactive exercise. But what I'd like to first is especially introduce the people here today. But also I'll be inviting John Roygaard, Horizon scientist, to give a bit of a one-minute overview of the state of the river and the issues that are leading to its current condition. And then from that, we'll take questions as we go. We've got probably about now, probably less than that, probably about 45 minutes. So we won't spend too much time in the introductory phase because we want to get some questions from people. So just in terms of who's here, my name's Michael McCartney. I'm the Chief Executive at Horizons. I'm the only non-doctor that's sitting here. Everyone else is doctors. We also have patched in Roger Young from Cawthron. Can you say hello, John? Roger?
Hi there.
So Roger Young's there. We have Alec Mackay, scientist at Ag Research. Dr. John Roygaard, Horizons Science Manager. And we also have Dr. Barry Biggs, who's a director at NIWA. All of these gentlemen are very experienced in the areas of water and water quality, as well as land management. So hopefully they'll be able to convey key messages to you and clarify what is, as I said earlier, quite a complex issue. So with that, I'll hand over to John Roygaard just to outline basically the state of the river and also what has led to its current condition.
Well, look, the Manawatu River is a large system that starts in the on the other side of the ranges, sitting here in Palmerston North, up around Northwood. It has some of its origins up around Ikitahuna, and it finds its way through the ranges. It drains both sides of the River Heenies, parts of Tararuas, and flows at sea down at Foxton. It's a large and complex catchment. It's got a range of geologies. It's got a range of land use in it, predominantly sheep and beef farm. There's a proportion of dairy farming within the catchment. There's some good native cover on the hills around the forest parks, the Tararua Rohini Forest Parks. What we've got in terms of water quality pressures, we've got about 20 sewage treatment plants discharging, major discharges into the Manawatu at various locations. About 7 industry discharges, including the likes of DB Breweries, Fonterra, a couple of plants, EFCO, Silverfern Farms, and New Zealand Pharmaceuticals. The other pressure, of course, is from intensive land use in the catchment and just the agricultural nature of the catchment. If we have a look in our upper catchment and think of things like nutrients and the inputs of nutrients, the predominant source of nutrients into the Manawatu in the area around Hopeland, about 97% of the nitrogen comes from farming systems, and about 80 to 85% of the phosphorus. That doesn't mean that the non-point sources, that the point sources, these discharges aren't important. They're very important for the water quality at low flows, which is a critical time in terms of when we want to use and enjoy the rivers. And so, yeah, the overall water quality problem is a complex one because there's a lot of things that are putting pressure on that river.
Okay, thanks, John. I could probably decipher some of the stuff that, from a river health point of view, there's been much made of the report by Cawthron, which talked about dissolved oxygen. And oxygen is one of the elements that make up will condition the health of the river. There are a number of others that are of interest to us as a regional council, and that is nitrogen, as John's already mentioned, and that tends to come from runoff from farmland as well as stock, as well as wastewater treatment plants. There's phosphorus, there's also sediment, and there's temperature. So all of those particular aspects or components serve to make up the health of the river, and therefore from the Horizons point of view, that's what we're looking at in terms of the river, the holistic sense, as opposed to taking one particular parameter and saying and judging the state of the river on that one parameter. You need to take the whole picture. So that's the sort of message. There are a number of causes that shape the river's health, and they come from different sources. So with that, unless any other people here want to pass any comments, introductory comments, you know, probably best we just open up for questions. And I'll do my best to try and direct it to the best person. Might have the best answer. Probably won't be me.
So any concerns with the river's badly polluted?
We are concerned that the river isn't healthy in its current state. In terms of pollution, as I said earlier, a number of things make up the cause for pollution, and our challenge is to manage each one of those components. It's certainly not where we want it to be, and if we don't act and do something now, then it will progressively potentially get worse over time. So the challenge is to try and do whatever we can do now in a manageable way for the community, because this ultimately impacts on how the community respond and what they pay for in particular in terms of change, so that we can get to a point where the river is in a state that the community is happy with over time. I think we need to acknowledge that the river runs through an agricultural area, and there will be impacts from agriculture on rivers, and you cannot avoid that. What you can do is put in practices that perhaps best manage those impacts. So it's a river that can be used for multiple purposes.
What are the effects of this pollution?
That's a good science question. I'll probably put that on to either John or Eric or Alec.
Well, one of the first manifestations of it generally is algal growth, and that's an outcome of high levels of nitrogen and phosphorus, which is leached from the land. And our data from various parts of the catchment have shown some quite major blooms of what we call periphyton, or filamentous green algae, and slime on the bed of the river. These tend to be during the periods of long, low flows, not always in summer, but usually you'll see them in summer. Those growths are to a level that starts to affect the benthic invertebrate communities and also the fish communities. So there are trickle-down effects onto the whole of the ecosystem, causing these high levels of nutrients going into the system.
So would you say that's the greatest effect of life in the river?
Oh, there are multiple effects in other areas as well. So that is one that's it's very obvious, because you can see the algal communities there. But of course, part of the program here is to also control coliform and microbial contamination, which you can't see, which is a very significant issue with respect to not only stock water but human health.
But if you can isolate the effect, i.e. this algal, can you not then isolate the core?
That's part of the process that's going on right at the moment, and to manage that cause to a level that the algal growth is acceptable in terms of what the community want from the river, whether they want trout fishing or not, whether they want to use the river for recreation, for swimming, etc. So that's the process, the science process that a number of scientists have gone through in conjunction with Horizons to arrive at recommendations as to what levels of nutrients would be required to maintain in-stream values and stream opportunities.
Well, I guess we're all thumb and mental too in terms of swimming. If it's clean and clear and it hasn't rained for a few days, generally you can swim in the river, and that's in relation to the levels of bacteria that are in the river. On the Ministry for Environment charts that came out from in terms of the league table for the country, the Manawatu River on its lower end was ranked very much in the very low, probably the lowest 10 sites out of the 90 or so that were on the list. Interestingly enough, when I looked at the data for the year that they used, 8 out of 12 of the samples that were there, you would have happily swam there in terms of the levels of bacteria. And I'm quite comfortable putting my kids in the river based on that rule of thumb. the times that I get concerned about those things are about cyanobacteria. And that's a, I guess it's a relatively new thing for the mantle too. These cyanobacterial blooms, they are potentially toxic, and they're a real worry in terms of recreation. You may have heard of them in the Hutt River, where they've caused things like dog deaths, and there is some fear that small children can be affected by those. But there's a lot of work to be done to understand why they're occurring in the river and how we can solve that one. In terms of understanding why the algae's growing, we've got a pretty comprehensive monitoring network in terms of monitoring the nutrients, the clarity of the river, how much bacteria is there, and we have a comprehensive monitoring program upstream and downstream of the major discharges to understand their relative influence. And we have been able to, if you like, work it back up out of what we're measuring in the river and figure out who is contributing to that. And it's one of the things that's happened as a part of the One Plan Science process, and there's certainly been a lot of understanding developed through that.
If I can just add to that, I think what Gary touched on before was around, depending on what value you want to try and achieve for the river, it will set the standard. So for native fish, the standard will be different than it is for trout, then it would be different for swimming, then it might be different for fishing, in terms of getting your line and your caught up and your weed caught up and your flies and lures and things. So the standards for different values would vary depending on what one the community decides to put in place for the river, which is the key issue. That's why the approach around the One Plan, for not only the Manawatu but all its rivers, is to go back to a values-based principle and say for our rivers, whether it be Whanganui or Rangitike or whatever, what are the values that the community want for those rivers? In some cases, parts of our region, trout fishing is a major issue, so therefore that could be one of the higher values you need to plan for that. That's why it's very much a community decision around those values that are set.
Katie Glenn to Auckland Rivers Council.
Well, we've been doing that for the last 4 to 5 years. We went to the community back in 2004. We went out to all the communities, the towns. We held workshops. We got feedback and said, "What if you had money to spend rates, what would you spend your money on?" And by far, the greatest thing that came through there was water quality for the region. We then go through and had 4 to 5 iterations of the One Plan. We're in debate at the moment, which the principal part of that is around water. And that consultation, that engagement through the drafts of the One Plan drew out what those values were for each of the rivers, and they've formed the basis of the final One Plan version that went out and was notified a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. So we've been embarking upon this journey of gauging what those values are for the best part of 5 years. I admit, though, that you don't always catch a mainstream people in the community through those exercises, which is why we had a whole lot of public meetings, upwards of 700 meetings, various halls, community groups, to talk through some of the propositions in the One Plan. At the end of the day, that just leads us to the point that we are here today, and that is that final document being presented to the community. We've heard formal submissions from all aspects of the community through a formal mechanism, i.e. the hearing. And the hearing panel now, which is charged with making the decisions on the One Plan, will have to weigh up all that evidence and come up with a decision. We'll do so probably in the next 2 months or so. So it's a long journey.
So it doesn't sound like you're really worried something should be done like right now. Stop it. It sounds like you're just rather be you're shuffling around it, aren't you, Ben?
We are consumed. I wouldn't say it's fair to say we're not worried. We are concerned. That's why we put in place the measures that we have. But with anything that imposes rights on individuals, you've got to go through a process.
But how serious is it? I mean, we can't work out from you guys just how serious is it?
Well, I think one gauge, and I think the community does reflect on this, is that if you can swim in the river, that gives you an indication of how polluted it really is. And John's indicated to you that if it's been...
We can swim.
If it hasn't rained for a few days and the river's low and clear, like it is, and most of the time people want to go for a swim, you can safely swim in the river.
Okay. That's terrible. That's in spite of people putting all the effluent in the river and the farming and all that sort of thing, it's still okay to swim in it.
Well, rivers have an ability to assimilate waste, and that happens throughout New Zealand and throughout the world. In this region, we have taken real assertive action with supportive sectors For example, 10 years ago, we had a large percentage of our dairy farming sector that were discharging their waste from their ponds, storage ponds, straight into waterways. We've got about 900 dairy farms in our region, and back in the mid-90s, probably a large percentage of those 500 to 600 were discharging directly into waterways. Now that number is in the 20 to 30. Same when it comes to industry and local government, city councils. They've invested, I think, upwards of $80 to $90 million on a sewage treatment upgrade for Palmerston North City alone. Whanganui's upgraded its wastewater treatment plant. So what I'm saying is these processes take time because you're talking about investment, you're talking about people's economic well-being.
In Whanganui, though, they actually put a ban on people harvesting shellfish at the peak of the pollution in the river, you know, that sort of thing. But you're not anywhere near that, are you? What are the scientists thinking? I mean, do they think it's bad enough to people stop fishing or stop bathing?
I guess the ability to swim in the river is one thing, and we talk about the water quality issues in the Manawatu relating to a range of different factors, and swimming and bacteria is one of those. The other one's things like ecological health of the river, and the ecological health of the Manawatu River is compromised. The work that Roger Young's done on functional indicators shows that the Manawatu River isn't in a healthy state in a number of places throughout its reaches. And the macro invertebrates in the fish communities show signs of that as well. So the macro invertebrates or the stream life that's in the rivers show that the pollution levels are moderate to severe, depending on where you are in the catchment. And so the health of the waterway in that sense is compromised.
I wonder with that, John, whether we could invite Roger to give a comment. Roger was the author of the report that came to the public attention late last year, which talked about, well, the media talked about the Manawatu being one of the worst polluted rivers in the world. So, Roger, just to bring you in, because a month we get you there when you're not physically present. Did you
want
to provide some comment on what you've heard so far, or perhaps give some comment around your report, opportunity to clarify some things?
Yep, absolutely. The as various people, John has mentioned, there are a variety of aspects to river health and a variety of indicators to indicate river health. So just like human health, blood pressure and cholesterol levels and all sorts of other things are indicators of human health, same in the river system. So the measurements that I've looked at are measurements of ecosystem processes in the river, rates of algal production and oxygen uptake within the river. And the measurements that we took in the lower Manawatu are very high. The guidelines we use for that are that values greater than 7 are considered to represent poor ecosystem health, and the Manawatu was way above that. So that's one indicator and is indicative of poor health. There's a whole range of other things that we measured in the river, and they support that finding. So the fecal bacteria that John mentioned, nutrient levels, water clarity, and the invertebrate community in the river all indicate that the river is in poor health. The measurements that I took, the Dominion Post, when they reported that, they asked me, well, what does these values in the Manawatu mean? I have a range of data from all around the world, and I compared it with that data, and the measurements that we got in the Manawatu were very high compared with anything else in the world. But that sample was a very small sample, and as you can imagine, there are many millions of rivers and streams throughout the world, so it's a big leap saying that a high measurement from the Manawatu means it's the worst in the Western world. And analogy I've used for that, if you had 300 people in a room and you measured everybody's blood pressure, it's a big leap to say that the person with the highest blood pressure in the room is the most unhealthy person in the Western world, and that's really what some of the headlines have suggested. So I'm certainly not suggesting the Manawatu is the most unhealthy river in the Western world, but our measurements do indicate that it is very unhealthy.
Compared to other New Zealand rivers?
Yes, all the other measurements we have in other New Zealand rivers, it's the highest that we've seen for that indicator. As John mentioned, the Ministry for the Environment has put out a league table of rivers using other indicators, just 77 sites compared in the National River Water Quality Monitoring Network. So again, a relatively small sample of New Zealand rivers, but the lower Manawatū shows up in the bottom 5 or 10 in all those different river health indicators. So I think it'd be safe to say the Manawatū is among the most unhealthy in New Zealand.
Before I send you today to sort of dispel some myths around the Manawatū River, what exactly are these myths that you would want to dispel?
Well, I think the key one is what Roger just touched on. That is, there is perception out there that the Manawatū is the most polluted river in the world. Roger mentioned some of the headlines, and clearly his answer just to you now is that it's clearly not. It is a river with some challenges, and it needs some action, which is exactly why you sit in this room today and see lots of paper lying around and a hearing that's been going on for the best part of a year. So the regional council in particular is very keen to put forward steps to help improve things. That said, it's not as though we have been sitting around doing nothing for a long period of time. One of the big issues for the river is sediment, and if you live in this part of the world and see the river after some rain, you'll see it gets very discoloured. The regional council has had in place over many years a multi-million dollar program to deal with halting or managing the erosion in the Manawatū catchment through things like riparian planting programs, through things like reforestation on land that's highly erodible. But the outcome of those takes time. Okay, so the community can't expect a sudden change in the river. It's a long-term proposition, and it takes commitment and it takes time. Equally, we have programs in place that encourage riparian planting in our farming areas to try and minimise the impacts of nitrogen getting into the waterways. And we know what needs to be done because we have an extensive monitoring program on the Manawatū River, upwards of 30 or 40 river monitoring sites along the river that tell us what's happening to the river almost instantaneously. We monitor on a very regular basis, and we use that information to then diagnose what the problems are and what the answers to it might be. But in local government, all that costs, and the competing pressures around that is the desire amongst ratepayers to keep rates down. So, you know, at the end of the day, it is a cost exercise, and you've got to manage things in terms of affordability. And as I said earlier, if you're asking sectors who are impacting upon the river to change, there's sometimes some expectation that there's some time needed for that change to take place. And that's why there is a long-term proposition here. The good thing, and the key message, is that it is salvageable. The issue around that is, what is the measure we want for the river? What is the quality of the river that we want at the end of the day? That provides for our environmental values, but also provides for the economy to carry on functioning. Because this region won't be in a position of telling farmers to get off the land, because agriculture is a key part of our region's economy. So, you know, there is a lot of stuff that's already happened. And this debate that we're having now is likely to be a debate that will have to be had across the country in terms of water quality.
That's just the fact that it's something that's much closer to the Western world, that's the only thing.
Well, and also to respond to any of the technical questions that you might have from the media point of view, to give you the rationale as to why it's not the most polluted and what are causing the concerns. I think if you look at some of the reports, there's a lot of blame being given to each of the sectors. You know, who's at fault here? There is no one sector at fault. There's a whole range of causes for the state of the river, because you're not just dealing with dissolved oxygen in terms of its health, you're not just dealing with nitrogen, you're dealing with a whole range of things, and those things come from completely different sources, right through to the erosion in the hill country, through the intensively farmed land, and right through the towns and cities where stormwater and wastewater discharges end up. Like today, where it's raining, that water is ultimately going through the network in the Palmerston North City and ending up in the river. That's not the same water that was right up in the headland.
Dr. Young can respond to that.
Did you get that one?
If you could repeat that, I caught some of it.
Do you think that the river is safe for women? And what's your opinion on how quickly something should be done, and what should be
Okay, I don't, I'm not an expert on fecal bacterial concentrations, and I don't have the data from the Manawatu River on the bacterial contamination of the river, so I can't comment on whether the river's safe to swim in or not. I would suggest you talk to John Raugard about that. The other question was, how long will it take to fix, is that right?
How quickly do you think something needs to be done to improve?
Oh, how quickly? Well, the Horizons Regional Council, in my opinion, are doing a good job with the proposed one plan. Some of the conditions and the standards that they are proposing in that one plan will help the condition of the river. So I think it's important that those conditions go through. This isn't something that can be done overnight, as other people have mentioned there. A process has to go through. Obviously, it would be nice to improve things immediately, but these things take time, and even if once the plan is implemented, changes and riparian management, planting along riverbanks, changes to farm management practices, nutrient budgeting, all those things will take time for improvements to feed through into the system.
To add to that comment, I think with the proposed one plan, improvements in the river will be seen in time, but by the approach being used, the primary industries continue to grow. This is probably one of the few regions in New Zealand where there is still enormous growth opportunities, both in our lowlands and our hilllands. I think by bringing those two together, I think is a pretty unique feature of the proposed one plan.
Yes, but some areas can become toxic, so it's quite dangerous. So shouldn't there be maybe some dams in place where those areas are? Are there dams in place for dams?
Yeah, well, one of the things we do as a regional council is put signs up where conditions aren't suitable for swimming. Some of those will be directly downstream of some discharges due to the content of discharges before somebody gets assimilated. And in other places, the popular swimming spots, in the Mangatanoka, for example, there's a popular swimming spot there. Frequently, we detect cyanobacteria and we raise signs that people shouldn't walk their dogs there or swim in those particular locations. And we've had to do that over the last couple of summers. And we're learning more and more about cyanobacteria as time goes on. But like the rest of the country, we'd be very keen to find our way to fix it. And the only way we can tackle it at the moment is to try and understand it more and see what those fixes might be.
We're all pretty keen on getting sort of a snapshot of what the river really is like, and obviously you say, well, different days it's different, yeah, good days and bad days. Hey, between all the AF sort of gives us an idea of that swing. Say, this is the Manawatu River on a bad day, it's got this much methane, it's got this much oxygen, it's got this much nitrate, and here it is on a good day, this is the levels for all of those. Are you able to do that?
Yeah, we are able to do that. In fact, we do it as we collect more information through our water quality program. We put that up on the web as we get it. It goes straight up onto our Water Quality Matters website, and we display the most recent data alongside the historic data from various sites. We show very clearly on that website what's happening upstream and downstream of the major discharges in the region. It's all publicly available information, kept well up to date by an automatic system, and so it's very transparent to find out what's going on in the river. If you want to understand around specific swimming spots within the region, I'm thinking a bit broader than the Manawatu itself, we run a swimming spots monitoring program, which again publicises information up via the web in terms of this is how it's been lately. These are some rules of thumb. And, we make the information available as fast as we possibly can.
Are you able to give us some numbers right now, just on a generic good day versus a generic bad day?
On a good day when the Manawatu River is clean and clear down by the Manawatu Teachers College site, which is a popular spot by the Esplanade, the E. coli in there would be well below the alert levels for swimming for E. coli. On a bad day, the numbers would be very, very high. If you take a 2004 flood, the levels of E. coli, levels of bacteria that you're going to find in that river are going to be very high. And it's going to be, during most events where there's rainfall that washes water off the catchments into the river, there will be high loads of bacteria that come down the river, and it takes 2 or 3 days for that to work its way through the system and the river cleans up. Generally, it's associated with the turbidity. You can see that the river is not clean and clear, and therefore you've got an indication that that's probably coming with some bacterial load as well.
Right, and that's not
clean plan, that's our boss.
It's a very good question. Community probably want a river, I believe, the community want a river that is usable for them for their recreational purposes. But I don't think the community want a whole lot of standards and change to users of water such that the economy of the region can't function. So they're looking for that middle ground, and that's the place that the regional councils occupy. We are neither the strong environmental groups nor are we pro-development. But what is the underpinning principles of the Resource Management Act is about sustainability. And sustainability means that you've got to look after all aspects. And sometimes environment and economy butt up against each other. And that's where the hard conversations need to be had. That's why it's a community decision in the day as to where that balance should sit. Who should pay? Always a big one, and that's why you need to go through it at a local level in order to ensure that you reflect those local community views.
So that's essentially what one plan is trying to do, determine what you want from the river.
What the community wants from the river.
And, but the science is still out as to how that can be achieved.
Oh, we know what the problems are. We know that what is compromising the river is sediment from erosion, it is nitrogen coming off the land and from point source discharges, it's E. coli coming out of pipes and off the land. So we know what the sources are, we know what the causes are. The science is well and truly clear on that, and probably largely agreed about what the causes are. The debate is all around how do we provide the solutions, and what does it mean for all those people who are causing those effects in terms of their day-to-day functioning, the economic viability, all those things.
Do you know which is the biggest one?
John can answer that, because we can talk about point source discharges versus non-point. So in terms of different times, they have different impacts. So John might want to comment on that.
It depends if your question's in relation to sediment or if it's in relation to different types of nutrient. If we talk about the levels of sediment entering into our water bodies, then the largest proportion of that is coming from our hill country farms, just purely by erosion. If we're talking about... there is a natural process whereby the catchment erodes into water bodies that can be accelerated through, I guess, farming the catchment, which is a activity that we have going on in this region, and there's a initiative by the Regional Council, the Sustainable Land Use Initiative, which seeks to work with farmers to minimise that and enable farming at the same time. In terms of nutrient, if we look, I'll come back to the example in the Upper Manawatu, if we look overall, there's some point source discharges there from Dannyberg sewage and others, and there's been some major upgrades at Dannyberg plant. In terms of the overall nutrient loads going into that river, more than 97% of the nitrogen going into the river is coming from non-point sources, and we can attribute nearly half of that to dairy farming. If we look at nitrogen at low flows, however, or phosphorus at low flows in particular, those numbers might increase to nearly 60% coming from the point source. So it's about timing.
Right,
97% of the overall nitrogen load going in that river is coming from non-point sources, and of that, about 50% is coming from dairy farming.
Okay. Non-point sources
being farmland from your native forests. From, you know, there are some background losses from the whole catchment. It's very small from native forests. A little bit more from sheep and beef, and it's even greater from some more intensive land uses, including dairy farming.
Half of it is dairy farming.
We can attribute half of the loads to dairy farming in that Upper Manawatu catchment.
Do you get sediment from dairy farming as well?
You do get some sediment from dairy farming, in particular where stock have access to waterways. We wouldn't identify it as being the major contributor of sediment to the rivers, but it is a significant contributor. And the more and more you look into the water quality issues of the region, and in particular of the Manawatu, you work out that the solution has got to have different prongs to it. You're going to need to deal with some stock access issues, and you're going to need to deal with some erosion in hill country and address some discharges at the same time. And each of those will have different benefits for different parameters, different water quality issues. But to bring that ecosystem health back, then you're going to have to address a lot of different activities to make that possible.
How are you going to get these with not like things that are technology or these things that are very advanced? How are you going to? I know I'm talking about working together.
Yeah. In this business, you've always got to try and look at a blend of a regulatory regime to encourage change, but also equally on the other hand, you've got to provide support networks to enable change. We call it the carrot and the stick. And we believe that what we have proposed is a good blend of that. Also, what was suggested from officers' point of view to the One Plan hearing panel provides some transition. As I said earlier, there needs to be some adjustment to change and people to plan for what the future might hold. It is a constant issue for us. We need to work with the community. We need to inform the community. I don't believe the farming groups are saying that there isn't a problem. I think, from my observation, that there's a consensus view that there is a challenge. And equally, I think the rural sector sees that they have some responsibility in terms of dealing with that. Again, the debate is about what that responsibility looks like on the ground for them and at what cost and over what time. So I think the debate really is around that. It's not about the fact that there isn't a problem. I don't think anyone is putting their head in the sand and saying there isn't a problem. The debate is around how do we advance the solutions in a way that can work for everybody.
So in saying that there's room for expansion around the Manawatu in terms of industry, aren't more farms just going to exacerbate the problem?
No, the approach that we're taking, a new farm comes in, you can use new technologies, manage the farming enterprise such that its net impact on the environment isn't great at all. I think Alec mentioned earlier, there's big parts of our region outside the Manawatu catchment that have great potential for more intensive farming. So we don't want to be in a place of locking down and stopping industry growth, because we want growth, but we want it to be managed. And any new industry that comes in can come in under the understanding of what standards are in place and what their expectations in terms of meeting environmental standards should be. So they can plan for it, factor it into the bottom line, and therefore carry on. So that's the least of our concerns, because we can manage that.
Yeah, but in terms of the techniques talking about to help the farm stop polluting, what can the council do to help those farmers with those things?
Right. Good question. As I said earlier, in terms of the erosion question, the sediment, our program is to assist farmers through direct funding, through grants, to look at reforestation, land retirement of that land. The fund for that is in the order of $4 to $5 million per annum we fund there, so there's direct funding given to the rural sector. In terms of dairy farming, we provide grants for fencing off wetlands, for riparian planting. So there is direct funding opportunities available to the dairy sector and the farming sector to actually look at those mitigation measures that we put in place to fix those problems. So that will continue, and indeed potentially grow, if the community are prepared to put more money into that. But equally, we need some security around the investment we make on behalf of the public, and that's where the rules come in. They're a bit of a backstop. They set the standards, and they are really designed for those people who struggle to meet good environmental practice. So we put those in place as a backstop. And I would mention that it's very easy to lump agriculture and farming into one group. There are majority of the farming enterprises in our region operate in a very sound environmental manner, and that's a very important point. It's not a challenge that's insurmountable. We can work with this.
Dr. Bruce would like to comment on the research on research conference.